On Saturday afternoon last week, Dave tripped around town doing the usual family errands in an unusually chipper frame of mind, feeling so darn good about things that he actually caught himself whistling on the way out of the dry cleaners. Happiness, as anyone who has known unhappiness can tell you, is not a condition of clean clothes, or of any circumstance for that matter. Happiness is a condition of the mind, or more specifically, the imagination. Saturday afternoon, as he moved around the city, dropping off laundry and picking up groceries, Dave's imagination was full steam ahead. The American newspaper man H.L. Mencken once said, "The only truly happy people in this sad world are married women and single men." But H.L. Mencken's dead. What does he know? As if to prove Mencken's point, however, Dave was, in fact, going to be single that Saturday night. Morley was going out with friends. Sam had been asked to a sleepover at his pal Ben's house. And Stephanie was babysitting for the Maddens. But it wasn't just the possibility of this evening of solitude that had Dave whistling as he glided around town. When he whistled his way out of the dry cleaners, Dave wasn't thinking about solitude at all. He was imagining in exquisite detail the things that he was going to do while he was home alone. He had a plan for something so wonderfully self-indulgent that he couldn't stop himself from whistling. When everyone had gone their separate ways and Dave was all by himself, he was going to carry the small portable television set down from his bedroom, and he was going to balance it on top of the television set in the living room. And then when he had the two televisions carefully stacked, his tower of TV, Dave was planning to watch Hockey Night in Canada on the small set and a couple of his all-time favorite movies on the other, simultaneously. The movies were already sitting on the back seat of his car, beside the family-sized pack of Doritos, the six-pack of cream soda, and the jar of jalapeno peppers. The Dirty Dozen, starring Lee Marvin. Beside that, True Grit, John Wayne's Academy Award-winning role as Rooster Cogburn, the crotchety, straight-shooting, one-eyed U.S. Marshal. All Dave needed was a jar of salsa and some of that runny blue cheese from France to make this a night he would never forget. By the time Dave got home that Saturday afternoon, Sam had already left for his sleepover. Morley and Stephanie, however, were in the kitchen talking, and Dave was so wrapped up with his plans that it took him a few minutes to realize that something was wrong. Stephanie was sitting at the table holding her head in her hands. And when she looked up at her father, her eyes were watery and red. Her face was pale. "What's the matter?" said Dave, looking first at his daughter and then at his wife. "We have an unhappy little girl," said Morley. "I just threw up," said Stephanie. "I have a fever." "Oh, no," said Dave. He meant it with his heart and soul. "I'm supposed to babysit at the Madden," said Stephanie. "Yes," said Dave, "I know. I guess you're not going?" This was part question, part statement. Stephanie shook her head, and then Dave said eight fateful words. "Who did you find to take your place?" Exactly. It was 6:15 on the nose when Dave pushed the Madden's doorbell. This is very kind," said Jim Madden. "We tried everyone." And then Jim frowned and he pointed at the portable television set that was resting on the stoop beside Dave. "We have a TV," said Jim, as Dave picked the portable up and walked in. Then he glanced at his watch. "I'm sorry," he said. We're running a bit late." Jim and Rhonda Madden have three children. Jade, age 7, Kenneth, who is 3, and the baby, Warren, 4 months. Rhonda Madden appeared in a flurry of high heels and a waft of perfume, Kenneth, the 3-year-old, trailing her in his pajamas like a pull toy. "Warren's in his crib, but he needs to be fed," she said, as Jim helped her struggle into her coat. "Jade knows the routine. Jade'll fill you in." Rhonda Madden was peering into the hall mirror, playing with her hair as she talked. "You'll have to go easy with Jade. She's a little upset because you're here." She was expecting Stephanie. Stephanie is her favorite. She likes Stephanie better than anyone. But she'll settle down, and she knows where everything is. Dave stood at the front door, and he watched Jim and Rhonda bustle into their black Saab. "Have a good time," he said. "We'll be fine." But they didn't hear, and they didn't wave back. Dave turned, and he shut the door. The silence of the house overwhelmed him. Dave looked at the knapsack leaning against the small television. It held his babysitting supplies, the two movies, his cream soda, the French cheese, the jalapeno peppers, and the Doritos. And he looked at his watch. It was 6:30. If he could get everyone in bed by 9, the night wouldn't be a complete loss. He took a tentative step toward the living room, and then his shoulders sagged, and he turned for one last look out the window. He saw the Maddens' red taillights disappearing down the street, carrying his grand plans with them. Dave was about to turn away when something caught his attention, and he leaned against the glass and he squinted. Something was following the car. It was a small thing. This thing that was running after the car, a small thing in pajamas, running with its arms outstretched in front of it. "Kenneth," said Dave. "Kenneth," he screamed. Dave was halfway down the walk before he turned and he raced back to the house. "I'll be right back," he yelled into the silence. And then he slammed the front door and he bounded down the street. He caught up to Kenneth at the end of the block. Kenneth, standing beside a stop sign, pointing at the red taillights of his parents' car as it vanished around a corner. "Mommy," he said as Dave picked him up. "Mommy." It was only when Dave got back to the Maddens and walked up to the front door with Kenneth slung over his shoulder, kicking and still screaming for his mother. It was only when Dave reached the door and pulled on the faux antique door handle that he realized that in his rush to retrieve the boy, he had locked himself out. "Mommy!" howled Kenneth. Dave rang the doorbell and waited. "I want my mommy!" screamed Kenneth. Dave jabbed at the doorbell again impatiently, once, twice, and again, and then he leaned on the doorbell, but still no one came. He put Kenneth down on the stoop, and he walked across the front lawn with the moths of anxiety stirring in his stomach. He peered through the living room window. He couldn't see a soul. And when he turned around, there was Kenneth rocketing down the street again, his determined little feet pounding along the sidewalk. Dave didn't catch him until they were halfway to the stop sign. When they got back to the stoop, Dave got down on his hands and his knees and he peered through the mail slot, holding Kenneth to his body like a marsupial. He could see right across the front hall. He could see all the way to the staircase. And sitting there on the third stair, he could see 7-year-old Jade Madden glaring back at him. Jade, who liked Stephanie better than anyone. She had Dave's opened knapsack beside her. She was eating his Doritos. "Jade," said Dave through the mailbox, "open the door, please." "No." "Mommy," screamed Kenneth. "Jade," said Dave. "Mommy," said Kenneth. "No," said Jade. "Shut up," said Dave. It was the neighbors who first heard and then spotted the stranger, Dave, holding the screaming baby, Kenneth, while he tried to jimmy open the Madden's patio door with a tire iron. It was the neighbors who called the police. And it was the police who eventually convinced Jade to open the front door. "Are you going to be okay?" asked the sergeant. "There are 3 of them, after all." "Maybe I should call for backup?" "Har, har, har," said Dave. As he stood on the stoop and he watched the cops drive away, the cops didn't wave back either. "Well," said Dave to Jade, "I was hoping that we could be friends." Jade sniffed and walked into the family room and snapped on the television without a word. Kenneth struggled onto the couch and sat beside her. And that is when Warren started to whimper. 4-month-old Warren. Dave had forgotten about Warren. Warren, he said. Warren, he said, as he bounded upstairs and found Warren's bedroom. When he opened the door, Warren was standing in his crib holding onto the rails. Dave walked in and smiled. Hi, he said. My name's Dave. I'm the babysitter. Warren let go of the rails, dropped down onto his mattress like a stone, and started to scream. I'm sorry, said Dave, but Stephanie couldn't make it. She's your favorite, right? Getting an angry baby out of a dirty diaper may be one of the cruelest jobs in the world. Dave looked like a mud wrestler by the time he had Warren cleaned up. Standing with one hand on the squirming baby's chest, Dave looked desperately around the room for clean diapers. Couldn't see them anywhere. He put Warren back in the crib and he ran downstairs. Jade, he said, where does your mummy keep the clean diapers? Jade didn't even flinch. Her determined little eyes never strayed from the television. It was as if Dave didn't exist. Dave ran back upstairs and he lifted Warren out of the crib. They were halfway across the room when Warren started to pee. And I'm not talking about polite little tinkles. I'm talking about a geyser of urine squirting around the room like water from a loose fire hose. Dave did the only thing he could think of doing under the circumstances. He grabbed the fire hose and clamped the nozzle shut. Warren looked at him in stunned wonder as they ran for the bathroom. A half hour later, David cleaned himself up, and he had changed his messy clothes for one of Jim Madden's shirts and a pair of Jim Madden's pants. A half an hour later, Warren was still crying, and Dave was rummaging through the kitchen looking for baby formula. He was getting desperate. Dave didn't need Dr. Spock to tell him that 4-month-old Warren was starving. Dave didn't need Dr. Spock to tell him 3-year-old Kenneth, who was trashing the living room, was wound up tighter than a 7-day clock. Dave didn't need Dr. Spock to tell him Kenneth was up past his bedtime. It's your bedtime, said Dave. No, it's not, said Kenneth. Kenneth didn't know much, but he knew enough to know Dave didn't know much either. For Dave, it was a matter, as they say at the management seminars, of setting priorities. A matter of first things first. Kenneth wasn't the first thing. Warren was the first thing. Dave had to get some food into Warren and get Warren to bed before he could work on Kenneth. Or more to the point, he had to stop Warren crying before Warren drove him crazy. But he couldn't find baby formula anywhere. He did, however, find a bottle of golden corn syrup. Dave remembered his grandmother feeding his younger sister Annie corn syrup off a spoon. He shrugged, he opened the bottle of corn syrup, and he squeezed some onto a spoon. Warren wasn't interested in the spoon of corn syrup. Desperate times call for desperate measures. In desperation, Dave dipped his finger into the sticky sap, and he stuck his finger into Warren's mouth. Warren's eyes bulged. He stopped crying, and he began to suck on Dave's finger with frightening strength. When he finished, he plucked Dave's finger out of his mouth with his little hands, and he stared at it, and he said, "More." Dave squeezed more syrup onto his finger, and he rammed it back into Warren's mouth. There was a baby bottle and some nipples on the counter. Dave considered putting a nipple on the bottle of syrup and just plugging Warren in. When Kenneth saw what was going on, he said, "Can I have some of that?" And Dave said, "Sure." And he got out a bowl and he poured about a half a cup of corn syrup into the bowl. And he gave Kenneth a spoon and he said, "Be my guest." Kenneth carried the bowl earnestly over to the kitchen table as if he was about to take his first communion. "This is good," he said. "Can I have more?" And it was during this unexpected moment of harmony that Dave decided it wouldn't hurt if he couldn't find formula to give Warren a bit of warm milk. Now, he knew the baby mightn't take milk right away, but he'd seen some chocolate syrup in the cupboard. And Dave figured if he flavored the milk with a bit of chocolate and a bit of the corn syrup, maybe Warren would take it. Actually, he was thinking maybe he could be Warren's favorite. At first, all he could see in the fridge were cartons of soy milk. Unfortunately, he kept looking, and finally he uncovered a jug of milk behind a bottle of ketchup. How was Dave supposed to know the Madden's kids were all lactose intolerant? On its own, the milk probably wouldn't have made Warren sick. On its own, the milk might have given Warren gas, maybe diarrhea. And not until well after Dave had left the scene of the crime. But when Warren finished his bottle of milk, and I tell you, no baby in history has inhaled a bottle of milk with a gusto Warren sucked down the chocolate-flavored syrup-laced milk that Dave prepared. And when he finished, Warren sighed and farted, and a look of great joy settled on his little face. And Dave held him up over his head and shook him back and forth and said, "Well done, Warren." And then he threw Warren in the air and he caught him, and Warren giggled. So Dave threw him higher and Warren giggled again. And because this was the first joy Dave had elicited out of any of these miserable children, he began to dance around the kitchen holding Warren over his head and shaking him up like a pair of maracas. Which Warren seemed to enjoy at first. And then a peculiar expression settled on Warren's face. An expression that seemed to say he was experiencing a sensation he had never experienced in his little life. Dave had heard about projectile vomiting, but he'd never witnessed it before. And when he noticed how pale Warren had turned, Dave frowned and he said, "Warren," bringing him down in front of his face. Warren burped. His breath had the sour smell of milk that had been left in the sun. And Dave held him at arm's length, but still in front of his face. And then a sound began to roll out of Warren's little body. A sound Dave associated with things like werewolves and mummies. And then Warren opened his mouth and a ball of vomit flew out of him, right toward Dave's face. Dave ducked. The ball of vomit flew over his shoulder. Jade came into the kitchen. Dave said, "Doc!" Jade said, "Why?" The vomit hit her in the chest. Dave said, "Because." It hit her like a bowl of pea soup. It was the most disgusting thing Dave had ever seen in his life. The rest of the night was more or less a blur. After they got Jade cleaned up and into her pajamas, Dave phoned home and talked to Stephanie. "Just as long as you don't let Kenneth eat anything sweet," she said, "or he'll be up all night." "Don't worry," said Dave. "I'm not that stupid." The Maddens didn't come home until after midnight. They let themselves in the front door quietly, and they stood in the front hall for a moment listening. The house was dark. They could see the glow from the television flickering against the kitchen wall. They heard a gunshot, and then another, and then John Wayne's distinctive drawl echoed through their house. Rhonda Madden looked at her husband and arched her eyebrows. They reached the family room together. Nothing, nothing in God's creation could have prepared them for what they found there. Dave was asleep on the floor. his head tilted back so far and at such an odd angle that at first glance Rhonda Madden thought he was dead. "Is he okay?" she started to say, but before the words were out of her mouth, Dave snorted. It was a strangled, snoring sort of snort, and Rhonda realized her babysitter was asleep, not dead, though he was clearly dead asleep. She had taken in the whole sorry tableau by now, the two televisions stacked one on top of the other, John Wayne holstering his gun on one, a heavy metal band leering grotesquely into her living room on the other, and her children, her three precious children, her children who had never watched anything except Barney, Teletubbies, and the Magic School Bus, staring slack-jawed back at the televisions as if they'd been hypnotized. Warren, the baby, was sitting on Dave's chest. His three-year-old brother, Kenneth, sprawled on the floor beside them. Jade was across the room, sitting in a leather chair. The three of them watching that television so intensely that none of them noticed their mother and father standing in the doorway. Kenneth was eating something out of a bowl. It looked like cereal. Jim and Rhonda watched in wonder as Kenneth filled up his spoon and, without taking his eyes off the television, held it up over his head for his baby brother. Warren, who had never had solid food in his life, leaned precariously forward and smacked at the spoon greedily. As she watched, dumbstruck, Rhonda noticed Jade was holding Warren's bottle loosely in her hands. It was full of a thick, golden liquid. And that's when Dave farted. In his sleep, he farted and he began to roll over, and Warren tottered precariously on his belly. Before he toppled off, Kenneth put down his bowl and he held his hand up. He did this without taking his eyes off the television. He reached over his head and he held onto his brother until Dave had settled. He did this instinctively. Clearly, he had done this many times before. Rhonda stepped forward and picked up the bowl of brown mush that Kenneth had been feeding Warren, and she sniffed it. It looked like cereal, but it smelled like soy milk and Doritos. And that's when Jim Madden recognized his pants and shirt. "He's wearing my clothes," he said out loud. "Those are my pants. That's my shirt." Rhonda Madden began to weep. When he got home that night, Dave told Stephanie everything that had happened, all the humiliating details, including the most humiliating one of all, the moment when Dave woke up to find Jim Madden kneeling beside him, the moment when Jim asked him, "How much do I owe you?" It will be 2.5 months before the Maddens will call Stephanie to babysit again. When she finally gets the call and arrives at their house, Warren will already be asleep. Kenneth will be standing by the door beside his mother as usual. Stephanie will find Jade in the family room watching television. And when she sees Stephanie, Jade will frown and cross her legs and sigh. "You'll have to be patient with her," Rhonda Madden will say. "She's been asking for your father. She thinks he's the best babysitter she's ever had. Thank you very much."